You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, welcome back to a crossover episode between yours truly, Jeff Garcia, host of Locked On Spurs, and Josh Bass. He is the co-host of Locked On Nets. And why are we meeting up? Well, because your Spurs and his Nets will play tonight at the Barclays Center for the final meeting between the two teams. So, Josh, I guess, first of all, welcome to Locked On Spurs. And, you know, I'm glad to be on Locked On Nets as well. Been a long time coming. You and I have never hooked up yet for a crossover show right here on the Locked On NBA Network. So I'm glad to finally be talking to you, man.
Jeff, long overdue. Whenever the Nets can surround themselves like good company with the Spurs, we have to do it, whether it's poaching Sean Marks, whether it's podcasting with the relevant team. It's always a rarefied air.
Yeah, by the way, you know, let's just talk about each other's team real fast. And I got to ask you, how's Sean Marks been? You know, he's coming from San Antonio. It looks like he's putting together quite the team in Brooklyn. And I think you all have Tiago Splitter working behind the scenes as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, it's been good. I think the work that Sean and Kenny Atkinson have done in a short period of time has been very much appreciated by Nets fans, and kind of taking this franchise out of the dregs of the league when no one wanted to work here as the worst situation in the league post Celtics trade. And if you had asked me this question in July, I would be worshiping Sean Marks like a deity. I think right now it's been a little bit touch and go. Obviously, I think everyone's frustrated in Nets land with the season that Kyrie had before getting fully shut down. Obviously, we knew that KD was going to miss a year, but you know, Sean Marks has missed on a couple things. I think the trade for Torian Prince was something that was not the optimal move. And then the subsequent extension for Prince, 2 years, $29 million, when he's been a complete bust this year, has kind of put a black mark on Marks's resume. And just with the overall lack of success this year for the franchise and some of the role players not taking the step that people had expected, it's not all gravy anymore. And I think the expectations have definitely risen for Sean Marks. Overall, still think he's doing a good job, but there definitely are some murmurs out there and some doubters, which there weren't before, because he had probably a 100% approval rating before the last few months.
Yeah, look, obviously the future is bright in Brooklyn, though, because eventually Kyrie will get healthy, and then some guy by the name of, I don't know, Kevin Durant will be back in uniform.
Sounds familiar.
Is that been kind of like, you know, the ace up the sleeve this season? Are fans simply like, well, you know, yeah, it's not the great season, but look what we got in store?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, especially on the KD front. On the Kyrie side, I think if he had just gotten injured, but also the time that he was on the court, if they were playing great and really gelling and with that big three of him, LeVert, and Dinwiddie, I think everyone would be kind of in much better spirits. But the fact of the matter is that it wasn't as easy of a transition as people thought. LeVert struggled a lot when Kyrie was out there. Dinwiddie struggled to find his place and really took off once Kyrie got injured. So I think there's a lot of kind of fit and chemistry issues that still need to be addressed. Especially with Kyrie's comments a couple months back saying some guys are part of the core and some weren't. I think that rubbed people the wrong way. Overall, I think everyone's super excited for next year. But the Nets did win 42 games last year and outperformed so many people's expectations. So to take a step back to this year where they just haven't been nearly as fun and as successful as they were, I think it's been disappointing for people. But we're still looking at the long run of saying, hey, we do have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, two bona fide Hall of Famers and champions in this league. Things do look pretty darn good.
Sean Marks, since he joined the Nets, has always been praising his start with San Antonio. He's mentioned it a few times and more often than not. Have you seen any signs of like, hey, this looks familiar, as if they do this over there in San Antonio? Have you noticed anything like that?
Yeah, I think we're definitely getting some of that. I think kind of the emphasis on the overall family, player first culture, and I think it's something that people laughed at, but a lot of the emphasis that Sean Marks put when he first got to the Nets was creating kind of a more family-friendly locker room, making sure everyone's kids and family and the overall team was being taken care of, not just the players itself, upgrading the practice facility. And I think based on what we've heard about the Spurs culture throughout really these last 20-plus years, it seems like that's been a huge point of emphasis for them as well. And it's something that Sean has really emphasized as part of this, as part of the Nets organization.
You know, I have just a few more questions before I understand your audience is going to want to know about the Spurs. You're looking at a team that obviously does not with Kevin Durant and no longer with Kyrie Irving, but you have other acquisitions, DeAndre Jordan. How has he been? How, you know, Dinwiddie, I think didn't LeVert just recently pop off for 50 something or 50 points. I mean, you gotta look at the core right now, and it's kind of sort of the same core that did really well last season.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because you have LeVert back and he basically missed so much of last year with that gruesome ankle injury he suffered against the Timberwolves. And he's, you know, he's battled injuries throughout his career with the Nets and dating back to Michigan. He's been inconsistent this year, I think really struggled before the All-Star break. Now he's kind of getting into a groove, that 51-point outburst in single-handedly, basically. Getting the Nets to beat the Celtics was a phenomenal feat, and I think really exciting about his future. Dinwiddie, to see where he's come from a guy that was couldn't make the Bulls and the Pistons and was in the G League to now becoming one of the better starting point guards in the NBA has been amazing. He definitely frustrates fans with his complaining for fouls and not being as good of a shooter as I think people hope and expect, but he's still a really awesome player. And DeAndre Jordan is a solid backup center. He definitely has his flaws. He's not what he once was. He barely leaves the paint unless he really, really has to on defense. But overall, if he's the price for getting KD and Kyrie Irving, it's well worth it. So as you mentioned, there are a lot of really nice pieces here surrounding that, but it's how are those guys going to fit together? And for the Nets and Sean Marks, it's, listen, Kyrie and KD came here and praised you so much for finding diamonds in the rough like Joe Harris and Spencer Dinwiddie and developing those guys into really high-quality role players. But now you need to find the next Joe Harris, the next Spencer Dinwiddie. And looking at the Spurs, that's something that they've been so successful at the last 20 years, just consistently churning out really, really quality role players and having guys to supplement their stars. And now, you know, their stars that they have might not have the same shine as Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, but it's still a competitive team because of the infrastructure they have and what they're able to funnel around them.
Yeah, and quickly before I turn the mic over to you, yeah, it looks like there's a lot of just Texas connections in Brooklyn. Obviously, there's Marks and Splitter, their time in San Antonio. And you have Jared Allen, he went to Texas. Yeah, Torian Prince, who grew up just outside of San Antonio. So there's a lot of heavily influenced Texas vibe within the net. So with that, you know, obviously you got my guys tonight, the Spurs. And, you know, when you look at San Antonio, I guess, what do you have to ask me?
Yeah, well, first I just want to know how much vitriol you guys have right now towards Nets announcer Richard Jefferson.
You know what? The Spurs fan base was split. I was on the side of team, this is just RJ, since his San Antonio days. Because he was exactly the same way. And he even did that before as far as taking a jab at TD and the city of San Antonio in a men's health interview. He was completely messing around slash kidding around with TD in that interview months ago. And then, of course, the other day. And it's not like TD is like a target for jokes. Sean Elliott, the Spurs TV announcer, does the exact same thing that RJ does. I think what's going on here, it's RJ and Spurs fans that were around when he was there still have a little bit of a, you know, disappointment in their eyes when it comes to him and how he didn't really pan out. And, you know, it's funny, though, Josh. I mentioned that men's health article when it came out on social media, and RJ fired back at me and he says, "Hey, did I upset your Lord and Master in San Antonio?" So he's clearly messing around, but no, you're right though. There was another segment of Spurs fans that just, you know, had it up to their necks with him, and they had some choice words for him on social media.
Yeah, no, I think everyone, obviously that's just a very sensitive subject in San Antonio, but I think from RJ's reputation, I mean, really, he just kind of is that consummate troll. And I'm sure he has a lot of respect for TD behind closed doors, but he wants to kind of keep up this persona that he seems to have continue building as every game goes by and every media appearance goes by. So I guess on your end, how would you rate the Spurs season so far? Because obviously, when you look at a record perspective, it's not where you guys expect to be and have been in really the last couple decades. But besides that really tough early season losing streak, they have played pretty well, it seems. And when you have a guy like DeJounte Murray, who's someone that you give that big extension to and pinning a lot of hopes on his first season back from really that ACL injury, to have him play the way he has and come into form, it seems like you couldn't ask for much more on that front.
Yeah, look, the Spurs season has been disappointing. If you look at it on paper, it practically is the same team last season that made the postseason and took Denver to seven games in their opening round series. You would think that it would have gotten better with Murray back, Derek White having a season under his belt, and of course, you know, LMA and DeMar DeRozan, you know, especially DeMar DeRozan, having a second season in San Antonio, and things just fell apart. They're not clicking. There have been times where they even admitted that they don't even know what was going on. There's offensively, they've been fine. They've been one of the better offensive teams, but you know, defense wins games and titles, and they lack in that department. And Josh, you're seeing a lot of the ramifications, the ripple effects still of Kawhi Leonard leaving. You know, they were blindsided by him, you know, and he forcing himself out of San Antonio. Then they got blindsided again with Marcus Morris, you know, reneging on San Antonio. And they made a trade with Wizards to make space for Morris, and that being Davis Bertans. And then Damari Carroll didn't work out, and he got cut. So it's just been a very turbulent season, and it's uncharted waters for most Spurs fans. I'm old enough to remember when the Spurs moved to San Antonio from the ABA, and those days were dark. And you know, Spurs fans are complaining about what it is right now. You know, they have no idea what it was back in the day, pre-David Robinson and Tim Duncan. So, but you know, all good things have to come to an end, and I think you're seeing it right now in San Antonio. When you lose the big three, you lose a guy like Kawhi Leonard, and you get back a deal that, you know, maybe they couldn't, you know, they couldn't force their hand to say, okay, give us DeMar, give us Siakam, give us Ibaka, you know, give us a bunch of picks. You know, they didn't have that type of leverage because Toronto had it, you know, and Kawhi pretty much had them over a barrel. But what you got now is a collection of players that are good. They just don't rise to the level of a KD, a Steph Curry, a Kawhi Leonard, a LeBron James, Anthony Davis. You know, they're all stars, great, but they're not mega stars. And you're seeing that this team struggle to find an identity. You know, I don't know what to say. Who are they? Are they an offensive team? Okay, yeah, they have the horses for them, but you know, they don't go all out, and then they're inconsistent on that end. Defensively, they're just they're not good. They're trash. You know, statistically, they're bottom barrel on opponent's points per game. So at the end of the day, I think this is just one of those seasons that every franchise goes through when they're going through a transition period, and you're seeing it right now. And yes, you mentioned Murray. Yeah, he's finally coming on right now. You know, remember, he's coming off a surgically repaired knee, and it looks like now he's starting to feel what he was feeling right before the injury. So, but it may be too little too late. You know, Jakob Poeltl, he did an interview overseas, and he said that they're still going to do whatever they can do to make the postseason, and great, but you know, another first round exit for Popovich, right? And that, I guess that could be on the table. So that was the Spurs season in a nutshell, their inconsistency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why are they so bad on defense? Cause you look at it and, you know, Poeltl's out now, but he's, I think from all accounts been a really nice surprise for them this year and a great stalwart protecting the rim. You have LMA, who's not what he once was, but still kind of a heady defender. And then you have guards with a ton of defensive tools in DeJounte Murray, Derek White, and Lonnie Walker. Like, why haven't they been able to put it together on that end?
Rotations. I think there's been some questionable rotations because you have players like Bryn Forbes, who is either if he's hot, then great. He's valuable on the court. But if he's cold on offensive end, then he ain't going to give you anything on that end, and he's not going to give you anything on the defensive end. So that it becomes a very porous perimeter. Obviously, you know, you got Marco Bellinelli, you know, he's past his prime. You know, he can't stop a doorknob. You know, he's just such a defensive liability. And the big man depth, you know, is an area that I think that's been an issue for San Antonio for quite some time, you know, ever since, you know, David Robinson. I don't really think they've really found a quality big man to patrol the paint. LaMarcus Aldridge, he is a great guy. You know, he's an all-star, but he's not the defensive presence in the middle that the Spurs need. Pirtle is getting to that point, but now he got hurt. So he's out for about 2 to 4 weeks. And it's just a mishmash. You know, DeMar DeRozan, you know, he, you know, God bless him, he tries, you know, but he's just not that defensive guy. They just don't have the horses to do that. And remember this too, Josh. Okay, yeah, okay, we know the obvious. They lost Kawhi Leonard, but they also lost Danny Green in the deal.
Right.
They also lost guys to retirement like Ginobili, you know, who was dogged on defense. And I always felt that he got, you know, underrated for his defensive ness on that end of the court. And then, of course, you know, Kyle Anderson, he left. He goes to Memphis. And so you're left with this roster here that doesn't really scream defense as Popovich has screamed since his first day as head coach. So all in all, you know, they're great at offense. That's for sure. They're one of the better offensive teams. But again, you know, if that's not clicking for them, then they're not going. I mean, look at their numbers right now. The last three games is dipped to about 109 per game when they're ranked about 11th or 10th, averaging about 115. And, you know, that's a hit. And since they can't get it done defensively, they're not getting it done offensively. You're seeing these close games. They're barely beating the Hornets, getting smacked up and down left and right by the Pacers, you know, who were bigger than them, and the Spurs are not a big team. So it's just a mess, Josh. Hopefully the offseason will fix everything.
Yeah, what direction are they going to be going in the offseason? What do you expect? Because they do still have those legacy guys, DeRozan, LMA, yeah, Rudy Gay, Patty Mills, guys who want to win now, but it might not be in the best direction of the franchise to keep trying to bang their head against the wall and try to get that eighth seed, maybe pivot in another direction.
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question. And what are you going to do with DeMar DeRozan? You know, he's a free agent with the player option. You know, he's going to be the biggest fish in the pond in a week free agency off summer. And, you know, does he take his talents elsewhere? Okay, great. But then the Spurs are left empty handed. My personal opinion, and I think they probably will re-sign him, probably not a max deal, but something close to it. I think they let go of Brent Forbes. I think he leaves. I think Bellinelli gets let go. You got other fringe players like Drew Eubanks. I don't think he's going to stick around. You also look at, Jakob Poeltl, I believe he's a free agent. I just don't know what classification, whether restricted or unrestricted, but he is a free agent, and you know he'll be a priority too. So I think they need to go into the youth movement already. I think you need to get those guys in the G League, their 2019 draft picks, get them going. You're starting to see one of them get more run, that Keldon Johnson. And I think they need to really start thinking about retooling / rebuilding. You're seeing some of the effects of giving out some contracts like to Pau Gasol, you know, and Rudy Gay and Patty Mills, and they're still going to have to pay on Damari Carroll for a few more seasons. So they got to clean up their finances too. But all in all, I expect this team to look quite different next season. But Josh and I, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to dive into the meat of this talk, and that is tonight's Spurs Nets game. We're back, and I'm joined by Josh Bash. He is a co-host of Locked On Nets, and this is a crossover episode between Los and Lon. Is that what you say? Everybody in San Antonio calls us Los. Did everybody in Brooklyn say Lon?
I think it's still catching on. We're trying to use it.
Yeah. Los is kind of easy to catch on, you know, but the Lon, that takes some time. But hey, you know, speaking of Nets and Spurs, you know, they're going to match up for the final time this season. The Spurs got one over Brooklyn in San Antonio. Now it's the Spurs' turn to go into enemy territory. When you look at tonight's contest, Josh, you look at the Spurs, what are you hoping that this Nets team does in order to get a win?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's stopping a lot of those periphery players on the Spurs, because remember that first matchup in San Antonio a few months back, the Nets had a pretty nice lead. Spencer Dinwiddie had gone off in that game for 41
yeah,
points.
He did.
But
yeah.
But the Spurs were able to pull it out late, mainly because it was guys like Patty Mills went just crazy that game and was hitting everything. Bellinelli and Derek White did some damage, and it was really the Spurs bench. Obviously, the Nets don't have to worry about Aldridge this time, but DeRozan, who you would think would give the Nets some trouble because they don't have that prototypical wing stopper at all. They don't really have a ton of guys that can match up with DeRozan from both a strength and quickness perspective and bother him in that mid-range game. But he was only 4 of 14. So the Nets have to get out there, defend the three-point line. The effort that they're coming off against Memphis at home was just one of the worst I've ever seen, losing by 40 points to a Memphis team that didn't have Jaren Jackson Jr. And that shot 20-45 from three. So against a Spurs team where, you know, they're not the team that's going to shoot a ton of threes, but they do have some guys that can knock them down and get really hot, like a Patty Mills. They have to ensure that they're really closing out hard and running those guys off the line and funneling them towards Jarrett Allen, who is emerged as one of the best rim protectors in the league.
Yeah, on my end, you know, when I look at the Spurs and I'm looking at the Nets, I'm like, okay, Spurs, you really got to do that. And that is simply play a complete four quarters. You're starting to see signs of it in the last few games, but they take their foot off the gas pedal. Case in point, the win over Charlotte. I mean, they grind from a deficit. I mean, a big deficit in the first quarter, having to just eke out a game. They can't do that, especially against a team loaded with weapons like the Nets have with Dinwiddie and LeVert and Allen and et cetera, et cetera. You know, Joe Harris, who can go off from beyond the three-point line. And that's what leads me to my second point is got to defend that three-point line. The Spurs perimeter three-point defense isn't the greatest. And I think a team like the Nets could go off on San Antonio and just shut them down that way. I also expect the Brooklyn to come out a little fired up, you know, considering how they lost in San Antonio. As you mentioned, Brooklyn was up with 14 points. They looked like they were en route to a win, and then Spurs pretty much outscored them big time in that fourth quarter. Also, too, I'm worried about the middle. With Poeltl out, LMA out, who's going to try to slow down a guy like Jared Allen? I could definitely see the pick and roll being given to San Antonio all night, all long tonight at Barclays for easy buckets. Yeah, you know, Trey Lyles, you know, cool. You know, but I don't think he's going to, you know, try to, you know, slow down Allen if Allen gets going as far as in that pick and roll situation. And you know, the Spurs simply just don't have the bigs right now. So I'm looking at that as an area that the Nets are going to try to exploit. Is that something you anticipate the Nets to do as well?
Yeah, I think the Nets are definitely, I mean, the pick and roll is really their bread and butter. I think it's kind of become unfortunate because they are a bit one dimensional on offense. But that dimension is pretty good. They throw a lot, they get a lot of alley-oops, a lot of easy baskets for Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan. DJ can still really get up there with the best of them. And I think that's what they're going to try to do. I think Dinwiddie, whenever he sees a team that has a center that's not the best rim protector, he's licking his chops. And I'm sure he sees that with Trey Lyles. Really, for the Spurs, the Nets are really not good at defending stretch bigs. And I know Lyles seems like he's kind of had an up-and-down year, but he is still a pretty good three-point shooter. And if he can stretch out the Nets, especially if he's going up against DeAndre Jordan, getting matched up against him in second units on a cross match, DJ doesn't leave the paint whatsoever, and he's going to have free reign to bomb away. And if he can hit a couple of those, you know, it is a make or miss league. He can get hot and propel the Spurs to a victory, because when you look at it, these teams are relatively evenly matched and both kind of in the mix of a playoff race, with the Spurs trying to get their way and claw their way into the eighth seed, and the Nets trying to withhold the seven seed from Orlando and also not fall behind Washington, who they have a five-game cushion on.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier Dinwiddie had 41 points in that first meeting versus San Antonio, and that cannot happen again. So all eyes are going to have to be on that perimeter defense for San Antonio. You know, the Spurs have seen opposing guards go off like that, and Dinwiddie's not the first one to do it to San Antonio. There's been plenty. But of course, you know, Luka Doncic does it to everybody, but Luka's pretty much lit up San Antonio in the same fashion that Dinwiddie has. Same thing for guys like Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, et cetera, et cetera. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Popovich, and by the way, he will be back in the coaching seat. Mm-hmm. Tim Duncan won't be head coach. So there's that. I can definitely see him maybe throwing out Lonnie Walker at Dinwiddie. He's just a bigger guy. He's younger. He's faster. And let him kind of have the defensive assignment on Dinwiddie. I totally expect that as well. But it should make for a great matchup in the final meeting between Brooklyn and San Antonio. Before we go into a break, any other keys to a Nets victory?
Yeah, I think for the Nets, it's really about putting the ball in the hands of their playmakers, LeVert and Dinwiddie, hoping that they can create good offense, because their periphery options have not been good so far this year. And on the three-point shooting side, the Nets have not been able to hit it the broad side of a barn. It's been horrible to see. You think they would have all these shooters, and that's really the system that Kenny Atkinson has implemented. But it's been a lot of misses this year in Brooklyn. So if they can get hot and hit some threes, that would be a really good way for them to get this win. They're definitely going to take a lot, but the question is, are they going to make any?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I think it should be a good game between these two teams. It was great in that first matchup, mm-hmm. and hopefully it'll duplicate itself, because I will be there on press row. So, if the last game was any indication how these teams could play, then I could be biting my fingers quite a bit on press row later on tonight. All right. So here we go, Josh. Who you got tonight and why?
Oh, man. Jeff, I think after the Wednesday night performance by the Nets, I would have to hope that they have some sort of fire in their belly and just want to redeem themselves after that 40-point blowout to Memphis. The talent's still there. We're only a couple days removed from that insane comeback against the Celtics where LeVert went off for 51. And I think hopefully Kenny Atkinson can motivate his guys. This is an important game for them. This is a winnable game. No offense to the Spurs at home. I'm sure the Spurs are thinking that same thing. But I think Dinwiddie is going to be the best player in this contest. I like him mm-hmm. to create efficient offense late. I think Jared Allen can have his way inside and really have one of his standout games that he's shown he's capable of having. Not on a consistent basis, but he can definitely do it when he's motivated. And I think he'll have a big impact. So I'm going to go the Nets, let's say 106-101.
What concerns me, as I mentioned in the last segment, is the lack of big man depth for San Antonio. Again, no LaMarcus Aldridge and no Pirtle. And, oh, look at this. The Nets are second in the NBA in rebounding, averaging about, 48 a game. And the Spurs are 17th, 44. Then you'd minus Pirtle and LaMarcus. Yikes. I think whoever wins that battle of the boards likely will take it. And you want to add more to that paint battle. You got the Nets, I think, what are y'all? About 50 points per game in the paint, something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The Spurs, I think that will be an issue. So I'm looking at the Spurs to try to really key in on that paint, try to control that. I think that ultimately could be the Spurs' demise. I think rebounding, getting out rebounded, and, of course, lack of big man. So pains me to say this, though, but I think the Nets probably get one if the Nets exploit that. And I'm pretty sure Atkinson will do that. So I think it'll be another close one, though. But I think the Spurs let one slip. And but yeah, by the way, thanks Nets for not doing the Spurs a favor and beating up Memphis. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no. Listen, I wish we could have helped you out there. I wish we could have. Was not close, unfortunately.
All right, Josh. We've been talking a lot about Locked On Nets. Tell us more about Locked On Nets and where fans can tune in and listening to your great show.
Absolutely. Please go and find myself and not only my co-host, but also my very good friend, Marcus Barahal. We are podcasting at Locked On Nets, same on Twitter as well. If you want to hear my rage tweets sometimes about the ups and downs of life as a Nets fan, Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
Not a problem. And thank you for taking time. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff G Spurs Zone. Go to the Spurs Zone. That's where I mainly write my articles at, which is, you can find at News 4 San Antonio and Fox29SanAntonio.com. And just like Josh and Marcus's Locked On Nets, you can subscribe to Locked On Spurs wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Pick a platform. Seriously, Josh, you know this. iTunes, we're there. Stitcher, we're there. iHeart, we're there, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no excuse for you to not find Locked On Nets or Locked On Spurs.
We're everywhere.
You cannot escape us. Trust us. David Locke has us everywhere. And we would appreciate you giving us a subscription and a few stars. Just, I know, how about max stars on iTunes? I know Josh, Marcus, and myself would appreciate that. But for Locked On Nets, this is Locked On Spurs. And he and I, well, us two, we're going to put a lock on this episode of Locked On Spurs and Nets.